Okay, we are on the top of Tezvav Amud Beis, second line from the top. Again, we're interested in whether Beis Shammai did or didn't follow their halacha. We had one proof that they did. We tried to bring multiple other proofs that they did, but we got out of them. We're now up to the Gemara Tashema. The Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik said, "K'shi yisi loim b'tayreitzer Rabbi Yechonah Chareini, ha'chayroni." When I learned the Torah by Rabbi Yechonah Chareini, "V'yisi shay oichol pas chareiva b'melach b'shnei b'tayres." I saw he ate dry bread with salt in the years that there were famine, meaning he basically had very little to eat, was surviving on dry bread with salt. Basi v'idati es Abba, I came and I told Rabbi Tzaddik, my father. Amrli, he said, "Haylach leizesim, take him some olives. Take him some olives. He should have olives to eat." Vaylachti lo, and I took him the olives. Ro oisim shein lachen. He saw that they were moist, which means they had gotten wet and they had become mukshir lekabel tuma. Basi vaydati es abba. I'm sorry. Amrli, ein ani oichol zesim. So Rabbi Yechon Acharoni told me, "I don't eat zesim." Now, what's wrong if they're mukshul lekabel tuma? So let's take a look at Rashi. The Rashi shein lachen, v'hukshul lekabel tuma. So what's wrong with that? Uklicheres tamei agabi amaretz. Uklicheres is tamei from an amaretz, meaning it's possible that the klicheres was touched by an amaretz, and when the klicheres is touched by amaretz, it becomes tamei. And therefore, anybody that's makbid on tumas amaretz, right, wouldn't eat those olives. And therefore, Rabbi Yechon Acharoni did not want to eat the olives. But tumei midrabanan, and a tumas amaretz is tumei midrabanan, but timasan, and it made the olives tumei. Now this Rashi, the Ritva asks on, because Rashi says that the amaretz touched the klicheres on the outside. Now we know that a klicheres is not makabel tumah from the outside, only from the inside, right? So really, Rashi could have said maybe that amaretz touched it on the outside, or maybe that amaretz touched the olives itself, right? But Rashi says the outside. That's what Rashi does say. So Rashi holds like the Rambam. If somebody should mute themselves, please. Rashi holds like the Rambam. Excuse me? Rashi holds like the Rambam that says that even though a klicheres doesn't become tamei from the outside, but if tamei's drink touches it, then it does become tamei on the outside. And therefore, it could have been that the klicheres is wet, the amaretz touched it, and then the klicheres would be tamei. Now, why Rashi had to say this, I don't know, but that's what Rashi seems to be saying, that even if the amaretz touched the klicheres on the outside, the olives would become tamei, at least midrabanan. And therefore, Rabbi Yechon Acharoni did not want to eat. So he told Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, "I don't eat olives." Instead of telling him, "I don't trust that the olives are tahar," he said, "I don't eat olives." So, Basi Vaidati is... I'm sorry, what?
What word in Rashi means outside?
Gabe. See, they changed the Gersa to Gav. Klicheres Tamei... I'm sorry, after that. B'shema Noga B'Gav HaChavias. Gav means the outside of the barrel. Gav means... Gabe is the back. Gav is the back of the Chavias, which is the outside. Taichai is inside, Gabai is outside. So Rashi said that the Amaretz touched the back, the outside of the Chavias. And that's what bothers the Ritva. First of all, he doesn't know why Rashi had to say it. And second of all, it becomes questionable because, I mean, Ritva has a question because Mamaisa, the halacha is that Klicheres does not become tummy from the outside. So they want to answer that Rashi holds that in certain cases it does. It still doesn't answer why Rashi had to say that. But that's what they want to answer in Rashi. Back to the Gemara. So, Rabbi Yechon Acharoni is refusing to eat the olives. Basi vaydati es Abba. So I went and told my father that he says he doesn't eat olives. Now, what he meant to say is he doesn't eat those olives. Amrli, so my father told me, Leich v'amar lo, tell him, Chavis nekuva haisa, el shus a smul shmarim. That I made a hole in the chavis. Let me explain. For food to become mukshel lekabel tuma, it has to be that you wanted it to get wet. That you were happy with the liquid, you wanted the liquid that made the food wet. If you had no desire for the liquid at all, for anything, then that does not make food mukshel lekabel tuma. We learned that out of a pasuk, that there has to be a fact that you wanted this liquid for something. Now, a person puts olives in a barrel, and what happens is the olives sit in the barrel is some of the olive juice oil starts flowing out. Now, do you want that or you don't want that? So normal people, I shouldn't say normal people, regular people, would like the oil that accumulates in the barrel. However, if somebody doesn't want it to become mukshel lekabel tuma, what he does is he makes a hole in the bottom of the barrel, which shows he has zero interest in the liquid that's leaking from this eisen. And therefore, the olives would not become mukshel lekabel tuma. So somebody who's worried that an amoritz might touch this, what he does is he puts olives that were never made wet once they were detached from the tree, and he puts it in a barrel, makes a hole in the barrel. That way, any liquid that comes out of these olives would flow outside, which means I don't want this liquid. And if I don't want this liquid, even if it touches the olives, it would not make it mukshel lekabel tuma. So what happened was, Reb Tzadik tells his son, tell Reb Yechon ben Acharani, that I, it was chavis nekuva, it was a one with a hole, ella shisasmu shmarim, the sediment blocked up the hole, meaning we made it that we don't want the liquid. The liquid ended up staying there only because the sediment blocked the hole, not because we had any interest in the liquid. Therefore, those olives are not mukshel lekabel tuma. Zakt Rashi, chavis nekuva haisim mishaleha, it was a hole in the bottom. Mishaleha haisim nekuva, there was a hole in the bottom. Kdeshi yetzim mashka azov menazesim mechutz. That the liquid that flows out of the zeisim should go out. The kibun the goli dieted loy nichelebe, and since he revealed that he doesn't want it, loy machsher, it's not machsher. Elis is smul shvarim, v'lo yatzum in amashkin, and the mashkin stayed inside, right? And therefore, he found that the olives are wet. L'fichoch ein lachem. Had the liquid flowed out, the olives would have remained basically dry. But because the liquid accumulated, and it didn't accumulate because the person who owned the barrel had any interest in it, it's just that the passageway that he made for it to leave got blocked up. Zakt Gemara.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Can I explain the mechanism of how this would happen? So the olives are in a jug. The jug is before any holes were put in the bottom, the olives within the jug at some point developed the liquid from seepage or whatever happens. But after they developed the seepage, an amharis must have handled the exterior of the jug.
Might have handled the exterior of the jug.
Might have. But if the liquid developed after the amharis, this jug was delivered by somebody who wasn't an amharis.
Correct.
It was just worried that it was handled at some point in the chain. So if the liquid had developed after the amharis had touched it, then there was no transmission of tuma. So a bunch of assumptions are being made here.
The assumption is the fear. Well, again, Rabbi Yochanan Acharoni was afraid of. He saw wet olives. He was afraid of that the person who had put it in the jug wanted to accumulate that liquid, and therefore the Amoritz might have touched the jug after the liquid was already there, and therefore the olives had become susceptible to tumah by the liquid being there, and once they're susceptible to tuma, the amoritz touching it would make it tame. So therefore, right?
I'm just trying to. Do we think the amoritz is the one who filled the jug, and does it matter? What if he was just a guy on a wagon who plopped the jug without opening it up?
Well, Rashi's saying that the jug would become tame from the outside, which would make the olives tame. Right, but right, correct. The assumption is that the fact that there's wet olives shows us that there was liquid inside. That we know. If it would be dry olives, we wouldn't know about any liquid. But these were wet olives. That means there had been liquid inside. regular people like the liquid. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan Charani makes the following assumption. These are wet olives. That means they were in liquid. That means they were susceptible for tumah. And Rabbi Yochanan Charani was so makbar on tumah tara that he didn't trust anybody to keep an amaretz away from it. That's Tysus points out that Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri is not trusting that Rabbi Tzadik took care of it. And we'll find out in a moment why he didn't trust Rabbi Tzadik. We didn't get to that point yet. But he's going to bring, Tysus explains, based on a Gemara that's coming up, that Rabbi Yochanan Charani did not trust Rabbi Tzadik. So therefore, he says to himself, Rabbi Tzadik might have let an Amara touch it, we'll see why in a moment, and I don't want to eat from it. And since I don't want to eat from it, I don't eat olives. So Rabbi Tzadik sent him back a message, I did not want this liquid, I wanted the liquid to leave, I wanted it to leak out. Therefore, these olives never became susceptible to tumah. So even though you think that I'm not careful enough with amaretz, over here I had nothing to be careful for because these were never susceptible for tumah. That was the conversation that was happening between Reb Tzadik and Reb Yochanan Charani, with his son being the agent.
So my last question is, does it matter whose intention it was that the liquid either accumulate or not accumulate?
It has to be the owner. It has to be the owner's intention. If I own olives, it's not your intention, it's my intention.
Okay. Thank you.
So he told them, Amarlai. So he said, Lechav Amarlai, go tell him, Chavis Nekuba Haista, it had a hole, else was a smooth shmarim, it was closed up by the sediment. Utnan, Chavish of Zaysim Mugugalim, a barrel of olives. Mugugalim means that they're squeezed into a barrel. How does he translate Mugugalim? Rashi says, squeezed it, what? What does he say? What does Archko say in the word Mugugalim? Okay. So anyway, it's Rashi says it seems like they're squeezed into a barrel. Bishamai says that juice that leaks out is not oil. And therefore, only seven liquids make something susceptible to tumah. One of the seven liquids is oil. I'm sorry? Sorry?
Soften,
thank you. Soften. Got it. Softened. So, Chavish Ozeisim Mugugalim, a barrel of softened olives, Bishamai says, don't worry about the juice that comes out. That's not oil. Only one of seven liquids can make the food susceptible to tumah. Oil being one of them, this juice is not oil. It's a juice that comes out that is not the oil, and therefore does not make the olives susceptible to tumah. Basil says, no, you have to make a hole in it, because that juice is considered like oil. But Basil agrees that if you did make the hole, but then the juice couldn't leave because it got blocked by the sediment, because you have shown that you don't want it. And since you have shown you don't want it, Basil agrees that you have nothing to worry about. Now, Reb Tzadik was from Beishamai. Tysus points out. And since Reb Tzadik was from Beishamai, Reb Yochanan Charani was afraid that Reb Tzadik doesn't care about the juice. He doesn't think it makes it susceptible to tumah. Therefore, he's not keeping his jug away from the Amaretz. Because as far as Reb Tzadik is concerned, these olives are not susceptible to tumah, because Reb Tzadik is from Beishamai. Therefore, Reb Yochanan Charani says, I can't eat those olives, because they might have been susceptible to tumah, because Beis Hillel says that unless you make a hole in it, it is susceptible to tumah. So therefore he told Reb Tzadik's son, I don't eat olives. When he went back to his father saw right through it, and he said, don't worry, I kept Beis Hillel, I made sure there was a hole in it, and therefore he has nothing to worry about. That was the conversation that was going on. Rabbi Yochanan Charani did not trust Reb Tzadik, not because he didn't trust Reb Tzadik, but because Reb Tzadik holds like Beis Shammai. And since Reb Tzadik holds like Beis Shammai, he was afraid that maybe Reb Tzadik had not made a hole in the barrel, in the jug, and therefore it, according to Beis Hillel, had become susceptible to Tumah. But Reb Tzadik holding like Beis Shammai would not consider it susceptible to Tumah and would let an Amoret touch it. When Reb Tzadik sent the message, I did like Beis Hillel because I made sure that everybody can eat from these olives. That's the story. And the Braisa ends up, V'adva Pisha Talmud Shammai. And even though Reb Yechon HaCharoni himself was a Talmud of Shammai, right? So really, he had nothing to worry about, because he himself would agree that it's not Mokshul L'Kabal Tumah, so why was he saying, I don't eat olives? Kol Dvara, Kol Maisa V'Yasok of Divrei Beis Hillel. But he kept Beis Hillel's opinion. Now, I'm a Bishleim Asu Hayne Revuse. If you tell me that Beis Shammai kept on doing their thing, so we have to tell you a chiddush. The Reb Yechon HaCharoni, even though he was in Beis Shammai, kept Beis Hillel's chumras. Eli Amrit, lo yasu. But if you tell me everybody in Beis Shammai deferred to Beis Hillel, my Rebusei, so why are you telling me that Reb Yechon HaCharoni kept Beis Hillel's chumras? Everybody in Beis Shammai had to keep Beis Hillel's chumras. So what's the chiddush? Is a raya that Beis Shammai continued doing what they were doing. And therefore, Reb Yechon HaCharoni was afraid that Reb Tzadik was doing Beis Shammai. And he himself was machmer like Beis Hillel. Even though he was from Beis Shammai, he was machmer like Beis Hillel. So therefore, we're pointing out why this story happened. But if you tell me nobody in Beis Shammai kept their opinion, they all did like Beis Hillel. So what do we have to point out? That even though he was in Beis Shammai, he did like Beis Hillel. So did everybody else. So here is our second raya, that Beis Shammai kept on doing their opinion. Even after the majority, or even after the Basco. Rashi.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Rabbi, can I ask a question here? So, if Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai respected each other, regardless of whether they followed, whether Beis Shammai followed through on their opinions and acted them out, but they respected each other so much so that they married their daughters to each other, etc., etc. Well, Shammai tells you that this is what he did. Why wouldn't you believe that he did what he said he did? Whether or not, in general, they acted on their actions, he's not going to deceive you.
You're 100% right. Once Reb Tzadik sent him the message, that I made a hole in it, Reb Yechon HaCharoni ate the olives. He did. He did trust him. At the end of the day, he trusted him. He told him, I made a hole. But beforehand, he had assumed maybe a hole was not made.
I'm sorry, I missed the whole point of this. That was my question. Okay, thank you.
Rashi. Dr. Rashi, Mugugalam Kamebeya Mugugalas, the soft-boiled egg, the chukim v'aymdim b'chavias, they're pushed into the barrel. Ain't tzrichel v'nokev. Shammai's opinion is, the mayil hayaitzim and hazaitzim, the juice that comes out of the olives, may peiris hain, or fruit juice, v'ayna machshirim, they're not oil. You have to squeeze the oil out. The leakage is not oil. Tzrichel v'nokev, shemayil mamzir kishemen. Because that juice is like oil. The mishem hachu nikvu, I'm going to the Bach, that's why they made a hole. Sheyetze hamashke luchot, that the liquid should leak outside. Legluya daite, that was a way of letting people know, basically letting himself know, to show the lenicha lebe that he doesn't want it. Tashema. We're now going to try to bring another raya that Beis Shammai did like they said, they like their opinion. Shalu as Rabbi Yeshua. They asked Rabbi Yeshua. Tzara sabas mahu. They asked Rabbi Yeshua, what should we do with a tzara sabas, with tzara serva? Amr lehem machloikis b'shame b'sil. So he said, it's a machloikis b'shame b'sil. So he asked them, Maloche k'divrei mi, who do we paskin like? Now remember, Rabbi Yeshua is the one that doesn't accept Basco. So they asked him, so who do we paskin like? Amr lehem, me'ma'ata machnisim reishi b'shnei harem g'daylam. Why are you putting my head in between two mountains, ben shtei machloikas gedolos, between two groups who are arguing, ben Beis Shammai Beis Hillel? You know, you're asking me to get involved in something that's way greater than my pay grade. I don't get involved in deciding between these two big giants called Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, who are like mountains. Misyorani shamiyaruta gogolti. I'm afraid that they'll smash my skull. Meaning, if I announce, right, that I'm going to paskin like Beis Hillel, that means I am making mamzerim here, according to Beis Shammai, they'll smash my head open. Meaning, I'm not getting involved between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Now, whether he literally was afraid of this, or figuratively afraid that they would react in a way, who am I to get involved in this? These people are much bigger than me. I am not getting involved in that. Rashi, Yerutzu kumavatiritz gugulosid avimelech. It's the Pasuk in Navi, Lashon Ritzut, smash. Okay, so he didn't want to paskin. But, he said, avarimeiv lachem, I can testify to you. Ashtei mishpachas gedai l'shoi mishulayim. Two chashiva families in Yerushalayim. Mishpachas beis svui mi ben achmoi. Umishpachas beis kufoi mi ben kshayshesh. These were the names of the family. Tzvuim that came from Achmoi, and Kufoi that came from Akashish. Shehem b'nei Tzaras, they are children of a Tzaras Erva who did like Beis Hillel, did not receive Chalitza, and married a Kayan, right? Which according to Beis Shammai would be not allowed, because according to Beis Shammai, if a Tzara went and married without Chalitza, the kids are Chalolim, they become pasul to kahuna, right? But they married and a kayan umehem kahanim. According to Bishop, right? Umehem kahanim gedaylim b'shim shagav mizbeach, and their descendants are kahanim gedaylim, and they served in the mizbeach. Now at this point, the Gemara is going to have a problem. Why would Bishamai say they're pasul lakuna? The children of Lavan don't usually become pasul lakuna. So, why would they say it? The Gemara is going to get involved in that momentarily. But at this point, this was the conversation he had. Now, if Beis Shammai kept on marrying Tzaras Erva, that's why he said, I'm afraid they might smash me open, because I'm going to be telling people that they're mamzerim, and they're not going to be happy campers. And therefore, I'm staying out of this. And even if you're gonna say, but if you tell me that they didn't do their opinion, so why, everybody was doing like Beis Hillel. So what would he be afraid of if he paskin like Beis Hillel? Let him paskin like Beis Hillel. What is he afraid of? What fallout would there be from his track? Nobody's doing like Beis Hillel anyway. Like Beis Shammai anyway. Is a raya that usul. And therefore the Gemara brought another raya that Beis Shammai kept on doing what they were doing. From the fact that Rabbi Shua was afraid to announce halacha k'Beis Hillel because he did not want the fallout, that means there would have been fallout. The fact that there would have been fallout is indicative that he obviously, Beis Shammai, kept on doing what they wanted to do. Zakt Rashi. Shehem b'nei Tzaris shenisu l'shuk k'Beis Hillel. They got married to somebody else like Beis Hillel. Umehem kahanim gedaylim. The kamam parach kabay minay tzaras v'kapashit lu b'nei tzaras. The Gemara is going to ask, they asked him about tzaras, and he answered, I'm not answering that, but I'll tell you about b'nei tzaras. They never asked him about b'nei tzaras. Now, afilu l'beis shammai, pshita d'ksherim. Even according to Beis Shammai, the children of tzaras who got married without chalitza are kosher, the b'nei chayv elavim ba'almaninu. Meaning, there was no question about the B'nai Tzaras. Why is he answering them? I know B'nai Tzaras were Kahanim Gedalim. Nobody would disagree with that. It would be a lav. The woman would have transgressed a lav, but it has no effect on her children. So why in the world would Beis Shammai, why did he have to answer that? It was a non-question. They asked him that look of Tzaras. He should have said, I'm not paskening. End of story. Why is he continuing to say, but B'nai Tzaras are kosher to Kahuna? As if there's a question about that? There is no question about that. Worst case scenario is, according to Beis Shammai, these were lavin. The woman transgressed the lav. She got married. Her children are kosher. Why is that? So why does Rabbi Shua have to respond about the children? The Gemara will deal with that as we go along. Hainu dekama misyariani. The mashvelu mamzerim. Because since Beis Shammai kept on doing their opinion, by Rabbi Shua announcing that Allah is like Beis Hillel, he's making them mazerim, the katnale, they will kill him. They will get so upset. Rashi seems to say it was a literal fear that these people who were classified as mazerim would gang up on Rabbi Shua and eliminate him because they would be so angry that he classified them as mazerim. I'm sorry. I'm sorry?
But you're saying they're not really mamzerim.
Well, according to Beis Hillel, they are mamzerim. But he didn't want to get involved. He was afraid, you know, danger is danger.
According to Beis Hillel,
they're mamzerim. They can't marry a Jewish person in a regular Yisrael. According to Beis Hillel, if one does Yibum to Tzaras Erva, the offspring are mamzerim. And they can't marry a regular Jewish person. But Rabbi Shua didn't want to make that announcement because he was afraid for his life. So he said, don't bring me into somewhere. If you're asking me to paskin, I'm going to get killed. I'm not going to paskin. I mean, I think by saying that he's basically paskining, he's telling them I can't paskin because it's dangerous for me. But I guess he didn't make the announcement so they can't come and kill him. I guess he must have been afraid of some people who were offspring of Beis Shammai's Tzaras, Erva, and would be mamzerim if he announced it, and they would get rather upset, and they might take physical action against him and kill him. So he was in danger of his life.
What do you say was only allowed and that's why they could marry?
That was if they did like Beis Hillel. If the Tzaras Erva did not do Yibum, and she married somebody else, so even according to Beis Shammai, who says there's a mitzvah of Yibum, it was a lav that she transgressed. Again, if you do like Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel has the offspring as mamzerim, because that is a chi of karas. It is a brother's wife with no mitzvah of Yibum, according to Beis Hillel. So according to Beis Hillel, if you do that, you lived with a chayv krisis, and the kids are mamzerim. If you do like Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai would say that the Tzaras Erva got married without the benefit of Chalitza, and she violated a lav. That would not pass on to her children. So, he was afraid to paskin like Beis Hillel because he valued his life. But he said that those who did like Beis Hillel are kasher lakuna gedayla, which wasn't necessary to say because there would be no reason that they're not. That's what Rashi's pointing out before. Now, so we have our raya. Now we have to go through this story and see how it makes sense. But we have our raya. The fact that Rabbi Shua was afraid is indicative that they were doing like Beis Shammai. Because if people weren't doing like Beis Shammai, he would have nothing to be afraid of. What could happen to him? There was nothing that could happen to him. But the Gemara now has a problem with the story. Now, till now, we've been operating with two opinions. The regular opinion, the assumptive opinion, if there's such a word, was that mamzer is a result of a relationship that's chayvei krisis. Any krisis relationship results in the children being a mamzer. That was the assumption we always assumed. We had Rabbi Kiva's opinion, who said, no, even chayvei lavin, the child is a mamzer. That was the Rabbi Kiva's opinion. There's a third opinion that we didn't really mention, and that is that mamzer is only from a chi of Mises Bezin. We mentioned it once. That opinion says that even chayvei krisis do not result in mamzer. Now, according to that opinion, if you do like Beis Shammai, the kids would not be mamzerim, because marrying a brother's wife when there's no mitzvah of Yibum is karas. Karas, according to that opinion, does not create mamzerim. Mamzerim would only be from those arayas that have a chi of Mises Bezin. A daughter, a daughter-in-law, a mother-in-law. Those are the ones that have a chi of Mises Bezin. An Ashes Ish. Those have a chi of Mises Bezin. Any arayas that's siblings, wife's sister, brother's wife, father's brother's wife, mother's brother's wife, all those things are karas. According to that opinion, the offspring would not be mamzerim. Rabbi Yeshua is one that ascribes to that opinion. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yeshua, if you did like Beis Shammai, the kids are not mamzerim. So what is he afraid of? He's going to make an announcement that the halacha is like Beis Hillel. Therefore, any woman that did like Beis Shammai violated karas. But the kids aren't mamzerim. Because Rabbi Yeshua's opinion is, mamzer is only a result of a relationship that's a Mises Bezin, not a relationship that's karas. So he had nothing to be afraid of. They wouldn't kill him. He wasn't classifying them as mamzerim. So what is he afraid of? Frek the Gemara. Unihi nami diyasu. Granted, the Beis Shammai kept on doing their halacha. And therefore, according to Beis Hillel, was violating karas. But my misyareni, why was he afraid? Ha'amar Rabbi Yeshua. A mamzer mechayve mises beset. Rabbi Yeshua said the mamzer only happens from a mises bezin. So he wasn't making them mamzerim anyway. So then what is he afraid of? Zok Rashi, Amar Rabbi Yeshua lekamam beperik achelitz. A mamzer ele mechayve mises bezin. So vafilu pshitele daloche kebeisilom. Even if he says that daloche is like beisilom, lemashilu mamzerim, he wouldn't be making them mamzerim. And for the Gemara, you're right. He wouldn't be making them mamzerim, but nehi nami the mamzuli havi, pogam miyahavi. Even Rabbi Shu would agree that they become prohibited to kahuna. That a child born from a chayvi krisis becomes prohibited to kahuna. And they would get, if you announce that Allah is like Beisil, so the children of the tsaras of Beishamai would be banned from marrying a kayan. And that would get them upset enough to kill him. Till now we thought that he was making them mamzerim, that they can't marry anybody, so any Jew, so then they would get really upset and kill him. Now we're saying, no, he never made them mamzerim, because his personal opinion is, even if one violates Karis, the offspring aren't mamzerim. But what he would be doing is saying they can't marry a Kayan. That would get them upset enough that they might kill him. That's the chiddush of this answer. That telling a person you can't marry a Kayan, would, when that person thinks he can, would get him upset enough that he might violently attack Rabbi Yeshua. So therefore Rabbi Yeshua was afraid to paskin. Zok Rashi, no Rashi. Now how do we know that? If it's not a mamzer, so how do you know he becomes pasul from kuna? Zok to Gemara, mikal v'chaymer mi'amana. We learned this out logically from the halacha of amana. Now, the halacha is, amana marries a kayin gadol. Her son becomes a chalol. He becomes a non-kayin. Her daughter is a chalola, can never marry a kayin. That's the halacha. A kayin gadol marries an amana, violates the law. The Torah says, lo yichalol zarai, his kids become chalolim, which means his daughter can't marry a kayin, and his son is no longer a kayin. That's the halacha. Now, the amana le kayin gadol is a law. It's a law, and in a certain sense is a weaker law. Because it is a law that only applies to one person, a kayin gadol. No person else in Klal Yisrael has a law of marrying an amana. The only person restricted from marrying an amana is a kayin gadol. Right? Still, the result is, even though it's quote unquote a weaker law, because it is limited to only one person, so it makes it a little bit less of a strong love, it's a weaker love. Still, the Torah said, the result is, the offspring are banned from kahuna. So if you have a stronger love that's violated, or a karis that's violated, for sure, the child should become pasul lekuna. And therefore, that's why Rabbi Yeshua said, if I announce that I paskin like Beis Hillel, I would be making the offspring of the tzara pasul lekuna. And by making them pasul lekuna, I would be getting them very upset, and I'm afraid for my life. Now, why would they be pasul lekuna? Because if an amana that marries a kohen gadol, the offspring is pasul lekuna, for sure somebody who transgresses a karis, which is much worse than an amana marrying a kohen gadol, for sure that halacha should be that it's pasul lekuna. And therefore, I would be passing them to kahuna, and they would get upset at me, it would cost me my life. So therefore, I'm not paskening. Rashi. So Rashi, can I just do the Rashi? Zok Rashi, mi amana ma amana lekayin gadol sheini sura kavu shavu bakayil bina pogim lekuna the siv lo yichal zarei. The pasuk says that the offspring is a cholam. Zushi sura shavu bi Yisraelim kahanim. Everybody can't marry a tzara. Ain adin shabna pogim. For sure, it's a more severe issur. It's not only for everybody, but it's also karis. For sure, the bina would be pogim. That is why Rabbi Yeshua was afraid. Yes, Avram.
You know, all the important
things, you call them up and say, okay, my son wants to marry this girl or vice versa. What's going on over here? I mean, is he able to do a positive action
to save his life also? No. I don't think he would do a positive action. He just doesn't make an announcement.
So they asked him to Masada Kedushin. He would not do it or would do it?
I would assume he wouldn't do it. Because he would have a previous commitment.
I don't think with a gun to his head he's going to have a previous commitment.
Well, there's no gun to his head because he didn't make an announcement that it's Usher. Why would anybody think that he answered it?
So they asked him about Masada Kedushin, but they know he's not a mom. The kids are not moms, according to him. So he's a fine person to ask. He's a fine person to use, right?
Again, they'll come to Rishua and ask him Masada Kedushin for this girl to marry a Kayan. And according to Rishua, she cannot marry a Kayan. So he will say, I can't be Masada Kedushin. I have a previous commitment. It's a bit different between not being Masada Kedushin and making an official announcement that these children are Pasul Lekuna. There's a difference in that. One is a specific subjective case, and one is a total announcement making who knows how many children are Pasul Lekuna. And would get a very, very strong response. So, therefore, he didn't want to pass Kintzaris. But he continued and he said, those who do like Beis Hillel, their kid is Kasher Lekuna. As Rashi pointed out earlier, there's no Chiddush in that. At least we think there's no Chiddush in that. All they did was violate a lav. And the result of a lav doesn't pass to the kids. So why in the world did Rabbi Shua have to say that the kids of the people that do the Beis Hillel were Kahanim Gedolim? Everybody would agree to that. Zakti Gemara. Kaboyim b'nei Tzaris, b'kapashit le'b'nei Tzaris. They asked him about Tzaris, and he answered about b'nei Tzaris. That wasn't the question. Zakti Gemara Tarti Kaboyim b'nei. They asked him two questions. They asked him, Tzaris, what is the deal with Tzaris? B'im tim tzolay me Tzaris ke Beis Hillel. And then they asked him, if you paskin like Beis Hillel. So then we have the following question. B'nei Tzaris de Beis Hillel le Beis Shammai Mahu. Those who do like Beis Hillel, what would their kids be according to Beis Shammai? That was their question. So they had two questions. Number one, do you paskin like Beis Shammai like Beis Hillel? He said, don't ask me that question. Number two, if you do like Beis Hillel, what does Beis Shammai think about the kids? That was the question. What does Beis Shammai think about the kids? So in that he answered, they served as Kahanim Gedolim. No problem. Even according to Beis Shammai. Because if Beis Shammai wouldn't have wanted these people to serve as Kahanim Gedolim, I guess there would have been a mechanism in place to stop it. And therefore, don't worry about the kids. Frek the Gemara Lamainaf Kamina. We paskin like Beis Hillel anyway. So why did they have to ask him, what do Beis Shammai consider the kids? Who cares? The regular person paskin for Beis Hillel. So therefore, why did they have to ask him, what does Beis Shammai consider the kids? We don't do like Beis Shammai anyway. The people asking him aren't doing like Beis Shammai anyway. Right? So he didn't want to announce the halachas like Beis Hillel. But that's how people assumed he paskin. Right? So they asked him, what would Beis Shammai consider the kids? Why do we have to know that? Zakti Gemara, because Lemifshit Vlad Magzer Grushasai, what is the status of a person who violates a lav and takes back his divorced wife and has children from her? Right? That's a violation of a lav. Does it impact the children? Do they become Pasul Lekuna or not? That was the question. Now, by knowing how Beis Shammai would treat the children of the Tzaris of Beis Hillel, they would be able to figure that out. Let me explain this. I don't want to confuse people. Again, we're paskin like Beis Hillel. They asked him a question. People who do like Beis Hillel, which means the tzaras ever gets married without the benefit of chalitza. And according to Meisil, they're doing nothing wrong. Beis Shammai would consider that these people violated a law. What would Beis Shammai think about the children? Now, we possibly like Beis Hill, so why do we have to ask him what would Beis Shammai think? It's an academic question. Why are they asking him a halacha question that has no pertinence in halacha? Because we don't paskin like Beis Shammai. So why are they asking him an academic question when they're interested in finding out halacha? They asked him, do we paskin like Beis Shammai? They said, oh, he refused to make an announcement. Fine. Then they said, what would Beis Shammai think about the people that do like Beis Hill? That's an academic question. That's not a halachic question. Why are you asking me, we paskin like Beis Hill? The answer is, because the answer to this academic question has a halachic consequence. Because Beis Shammai considers the woman who gets married without chalitza as having violated a law. What happens to her children would be a indication to what happens to every child of a chayvei lavin. Now, what chayvei lavin are we talking about? It can't be a mamzer, because a mamzer, the kids are mamzerim, so obviously they can't marry a kayan. It can be a nasin because the kids are nesinim, so obviously the kids can't marry a kayan. It can be an amana l'kayan gadol or a grusha t'kayan hejet because the Torah said beferish, they're halolim, they can't marry a kayan. There's one law left out there that applies across the board, and yet we don't know what the status of the child is. And that is a yid who takes back his divorced lady after she married somebody else. Right? And she got divorced or widowed. And he takes her back, and he has a child with her. That was a violation of a law. And we don't, what is the status of the child? We don't have an indication what to do with that child. It's not the Amman and the Grusha that marry a Kayan. There the Torah told us Beferish that the kids are Chalalim. It's not Mamzer and Nassim. There the Torah told us Beferish that the kid can't marry Yisrael, let alone a Kayan. So we have one law left. And that law is marrying Magzer Grushasai. Now, if you look at Yevama Lashuk, if you look at the halacha of what happens when a Yevama marries without Chalitza, her child would be similar to the child of Magzer Grushasai. Both would be children of a lav, and we don't know their status. So they decided, they would ask him, what does Beis Shammai do with Beis Hill's Tzara's children, which is Yevama Lashuk? By answering that question, they would know what to do by a Magzer Grushasai. That's why they asked him that question. They said, what is the status, according to Beis Shammai, in Beis Hill's children? Right? And therefore, if the people that do which means children of a lav, where the Torah didn't reveal what the status of the children is. By you telling us the answer to that academic question, we can now go to Magzer Grushasai, which is the same level of lav, and figure out what is the consequence to children of that lav. That's why they asked him this academic question. And the truth is, they could have said, straightforward, what is the halacha of a yevama who gets married without chalitza? What happens to her children? Because even Beis Hill holds there are certain yevamas that are not allowed to get married without chalitza. What if she does? What is the status of her children? They asked it, what would Beis Shammai do with Beis Hill's bnei taras? And therefore they would know the halacha by yevama l'shuk and by magzer grushasai. That's why they asked the question. To find out, what are the consequences of children when their parents had a relationship that was alive, where the Torah did not tell us what happens to the children? That was the question they wanted to know. L'may nafkamina, l'mifshet v'lad magzer grushasai, l'Beis Hill. Now, mikamina, okay, let's catch up with Rashi. Zok Rashi, b'nei tzaras l'Beis Hill, d'chai v'ilav aninu, mi havet p'gumim alibet l'Beis Shammai. L'may nafkamina, what difference does it make? L'mifshet v'lad magzer grushasai, b'shenizis l'achar, she married somebody else, v'achzira, and then he took her back, meaning she got divorced or widowed from the second husband. What would Beis Hill do with that daughter? Now, if you tell me the answer of what Beis Shammai does with Beis Hill's daughter of Etzara, which is a Yevama L'shuk, according to Beis Shammai, right? She married without Chalitza. what happens to her daughter would tell us what happens to Mahzir Gershasai. Nishma, we would find out, Lebesil Babas Mahzir Gershasai, the Havinami Chai Vilavan. Period. Now, what, this is the kasha they asked him. So we understand the Shaila now. The Shaila is, a woman transgresses a lav where the Torah did not tell us what happens to the kids. Many lavin, the Torah told us what happens to the children. Torah says if a Yisrael marries a Mamzeris, the kids are Mamzerim. A Yisrael marries a Nesina from Nasin, the kids are Nesinim. A Kayah marries a Grusha, the kids are Chalolim. The Torah specified consequences to kid children. There are two lavin that the Torah did not specify consequences to children. What happens when a woman gets married without the benefit of chalitza, a yavama l'shuk, any yavama l'shuk, but in this case, it's only yavama l'shuk according to Beis Shammai, but it's the same yavama l'shuk. She got married without the benefit of chalitza. There was a violation of a lav. What happens to the children? Are they kasher lakuna or not? The second lav where it applies is mamzer grushasai. The Torah said a person's not allowed to take back his divorced wife that married somebody else, right, and then got widowed or divorced, and Torah never specified what happens to the children. What happens to the children? So we want to know, that was their question. Children born from a L'chai B'lavin, that the Torah did not specify consequences, are there or are they not consequences to the children? That was the question. And why should there be consequences to the children? If the Torah didn't write it, why should it be? Zamti Gemara, I'll tell you why. Because Ma'amana L'chai B'lavin She'ini Sura Sheva Bako. Madach and Amana to a Kayin Gadol, as we pointed out earlier, is a weaker lav. It's only a lav to a Kayin Gadol. Still, b'no pogum, the child has consequences. So Zushi, Surah Shavu Bakayel, Yevama L'shuk is to everybody. Magzir Grushasai is to everybody. Anybody that divorced his wife. It's not limited to one person in Klal Yisrael. Ein Adin Shebna Pogum. Isn't it for sure that the children should be pogum? And therefore, maybe we should make a Kal V'chomer and say that the offspring of these two lavin, where the Torah did not specify consequences to the children, logic should tell us that they must become pasul lakuna. That was the question that they asked him. Do we make this Kal V'chomer or not? Now, why shouldn't you make the Kal V'chomer? It's an obvious Kal V'chomer. If you have a case where it's a weaker lav and there are consequences to the children, so when there's a stronger lav, there for sure should be consequences to the children. Zokta Gemara, I do me ikil mifrach. There is a shlug up to this Kal V'chomer. Ma'ala amona, she atzma mischalelas. The halacha is, and this is learnt out in the seventh parak in Yevamos, that a Yevama L'shuk or a Magzir Gerushasai, if they violate the lav, the woman themselves do not become Pasul Lakuna. Even though when an Amana marries a Kayin Gadol, she becomes a Chalala and can no longer marry any Kayin, there's a consequence not only to the children, but to the woman herself. By a Magzir Gerushasai and by a Yevama L'shuk, there are no consequences to the woman, derived from a pasuk. And therefore, it's different. You can't make the Kal V'chomer say that children should have consequences, because the woman herself doesn't have consequences. And since the woman herself doesn't have consequences, we see that the Torah treats these lavin more lenient than it does on Amana L'Kayin Gadol. You wanted to make a Kal V'chomer and say that by Amana L'Kayin Gadol, which is a weaker lav, there's consequences to the children for sure by a stronger lav. I see that in one area, the Torah makes less consequences to these lavin than Amana L'Kayin Gadol. The woman herself is unaffected. She does not become Pasul Lakuna. And therefore, since she doesn't become Pasul Lakuna, that means the Torah made it less consequential. So maybe it's less consequential for the children also. That was their Shaila. That was what they asked Rabbi Yeshua. Yes.
All right, two questions. First of all, do we have a drasha, hitoweva lein vanatoweva?
Right.
But isn't it, so what do you mean, it's the famous, at least according to that, that the banana is not halal?
I'm listening, I'm thinking.
Okay, that's one thing. And the other thing is, bothering me for the past couple of minutes, was why do we say, since the love is only on the Kohen Gadol, it's a weaker love? You could say, what do you mean, the opposite. It's a stronger love because only it's...
Now that kasha doesn't bother me. That kasha doesn't bother me. Any lav that only applies to one person is considered a weaker lav. But by the way, your kasha before is Taisa's kasha on Yudal Amud Beis. But Taisa says, what happened to the drushas of Hita Eva? And Taisa says that the Talmidim Rebbe Yeshua did not know that drusha.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll continue Mitzvah Shem on Monday. Sunday, Chazar is at 6:30. Emet Hashem Monday morning, 6:00. And again, next week, Emet Hashem will be our last week before summer vacation, and we will keep posted at what day we will stop. Have a wonderful Shabbos.